We're in chapter 27, right at the beginning, page 1516. We are continuing in our chapters about depression and how to deal with various sorts of depression. And the last chapter, which is the introductory chapter, he talked about, first of all, the concept of emunah, believing in Hashem, having bitachon, trusting that everything's going to work the way it's supposed to work. And if you do that, then you're really not going to come to any problems with crises and stress and this type of stuff. And he says, what happens if a person has depression from mundane affairs, children, health, and business? So he says, listen, everything's like Shkacha Pratis, and if you'll have a faith in Hashem, everything's working out the way it's supposed to be, because everything's Gamza Latova.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to be depressed. Then he said, what happens if a person is depressed because he is having all kinds of thoughts when, never mind when he's davening, but when he's in the middle of business? Like, why am I not a better Jew? And he's getting depressed why he's not a better Jew. Okay, so for this he says, well, there's times for that. If it's in the middle of your business, that's not a time to be thinking, why am I not a better Jew? What you're supposed to be thinking about when you're in the middle of your business is
doing proper business.
Right. You know, when you're driving around in the streets and they're ice coated, and you're thinking to yourself, what do I need this for? Driving around and the traffic and the back and the forth and the ice and it'd be better if I was just sitting someplace and sitting and learning. Okay, so that's not, and then I'm going to feel really bad about it, the fact that I got to do what I got to do. No, says that's already the Yetzirah, because one of the tools of the Yetzirah is depression. So then he says, he continues this line of reasoning in chapter 27. What is this guy worried about? He's not worried about his sins, which is that last chapter. This guy, I should have such problems. He's worried about his machshav azaras. He's worrying about his desires.
Foreign thoughts.
You know, the idea of foreign thoughts. I can't help myself in thinking about the Baal Shem Tov had a bit of a biting wit. And when someone came to him and said, I am plagued by machshava zaras. I am plagued by strange thoughts. And he said, for you, they're not strange at all. They're right at home.
Yeah.
So
I remember that line. Out.
Okay, so now, the question now becomes, is a person should worry about that they're thinking improper thoughts. Because really, we are not animals to entertain. There are times, yes.
Okay.
There is a time. There's a time and a place for everything.
Yeah, okay, fair.
Like, for example, Erev Rosh Hashanah, like the night before Rosh Hashanah, okay?
Might be a time to get thoughts, yeah.
And the guy is thinking to himself, man, I had these thoughts. You're stronger than I am. Guy has these thoughts that they've been plaguing him for a whole year, and now he's going to be resolved that
that's because I don't buy this on.
I'm not going to do this anymore. Yeah. And like right before Rosh Hashanah, he makes a good hachlata. He feels bad about the fact that this last year he wasn't doing such a great job with his thoughts. And so now he's going to do a better job. That's fine. That's commendable. Okay? But so he says, he's not thinking of these thoughts about davening during the time of davening. Which that's going to, the time of davening is the time to think about just about everything else. Any other thought that you could possibly think of, any other problem, a phone call you have to make, something you have to do today, this needs that, that needs this, whatever it is that you could possibly think about besides your davening, that's what you're going to think about during davening.
Absolutely.
And that's just the way life is.
Okay.
So he says there's no point in getting depressed about that because that just shows that you're a normal person.
Right.
I mean, the Rebbe says from one of the earlier sikhas from the early 50s,
yeah,
in discussing a Mishnah, since we're on this topic, we should talk about this last week, that says that if a person's in, it's Mishnah and Brachas, that if a person's in the middle of davening and they happen to look down and notice that there's a snake wrapping itself around your feet. Mm. So the Mishnah says, just keep on davening. Unless you haven't noticed it, that it's one of the few varieties of poisonous snakes.
Unless it's a copperhead. Or
most like a rattlesnake, yeah. You know, cobra. But most snakes are not poisonous.
Water moccasin, yeah.
Asp, yeah. Yes. So if it's not, I think Israel has, in Israel, the mission was written, I think there are three or five varieties
of
poisonous snake.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think there are any poisonous snakes. Oh, there's rattlers. There are rattlers.
Oh, yeah. Here in America?
And what do you call it? Michigan.
I don't think there are any poisonous snakes. I don't think there's any poisonous snakes in Michigan.
No? In Jersey, you got copperheads.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of poison stuff down south.
Yeah, they like it where it's warm. Mm. Water moccasins. Anyway, so if you got a snake wrapping itself around your feet, so the Mishnah says keep diving. What happens if you have a scorpion playing around your toes when you're davening? So it says stop and move away. Because all scorpions are poisonous. Not that you're going to die, per se, from getting stung by a scorpion, but all scorpions are poisonous, and if it stings you, it's going to be a serious situation that's going to have to be dealt with.
Yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah.
So that Rebbe explains this Mishnah, that when a person's davening, so let's say he's like got a snake around. Snake's poison heats up the body. Snake's poison travels along through the bloodstream, except for the cobras that travels along the nerves. But and what happens is the person gets really hot, they get a fever, and then they fall over dead.
Right.
Okay, so this is analogous to a person who is thinking some kind of really passionate thought that he shouldn't be thinking. Okay. So what does it say? Since he's passionate about something, so that's fine. Now that you realize that he's passionate for the wrong thing, take the passion and start thinking the right thing. Just keep going. But what happens if a person's got a scorpion? Scorpion, the poison cools the body down. So here what happens is the person's davening, he's davening cold. Mm-hmm. He's got no excitement whatsoever. So the Mishnah says,
Move away. Yeah.
Stop what you're doing. Stop that kind of a davening.
Right.
Regroup and think about something that should get you excited.
Right.
You have a cup of tea, Sean? Anyway, so this thing is Ella Be'es Osik Be'es V'Derech Eretz. He's in the middle of his business. Rikiah Gavner, some other place like that. Adarabba, not only should he not get depressed about it, Yesh Lain L'Sameach B'Chalkai. This guy should really be happy. Whenever this guy suddenly has, as President Carter once says, a desire in his heart, Sha'ash Nefelos L'Machshav Dehu Masir Da'ite Mehem. Because what does he have the opportunity now? Now he has the opportunity to stop thinking it. He's in the middle of doing something, and suddenly a thought that comes into his head pops in his head. So what do we suggest that he does? It says, Masir Yadayim, stop thinking about it, push the thought out with two hands. Now what has he done? Is he's Mekayim a mitzvah. He just did a mitzvah. He fulfilled the precept of do not turn after your hearts, after your eyes, that you stray after them.
You go astray, yes.
So it's a positive commandment. Okay, he's just done that. He's pushed it out, and now what he's done is he's just, how could you be sad that you just did a mitzvah? Okay, later on he's going to say, oh, the guy's upset that he's got the thoughts to begin with. Okay, so that's arrogance. Mm. That's plain and simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's expecting what? If I was a tzaddik, blah, 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 you know, then he wouldn't be having the thoughts. Okay, so if you like a Rashi, that Rashi was once walking in the road in Alsace-Lorraine, and he saw a noble woman riding a horse. And she had her legs like Western style, mm-hmm. instead of side saddle.
Mm-hmm.
And he was greatly pained over having witnessed this act of immodesty, mm-hmm. and could not for the life of him understand why Hashem would do such a thing to him, that he should be exposed to such things like that. Rashi would be living today, he would probably drop dead of a heart attack. The things that people see in the
street.
By
the time he was two.
Yeah, really. And then suddenly, so what happens is he's writing his commentary on Shmais, and he's describing there the ephod of the Kohen Gadol, and how does he describe it? Mm. Like their aprons that the noble women wear when they're riding their horses.
Mm-hmm.
If he wouldn't have seen that thing,
he couldn't have described
it. He would never been able to describe it in such a way. Not that that helps me or you at all, because I don't know how Alsatian noble women riding horses look. So, but in his day and time, it kind of like helped, right next to the old French that he stuck in there.
Exactly.
So that a person's thinking to himself, you know, I'm just like Rashi. Mm. Rashi never had a thought pop into his head. You know, so I'm going to get depressed about the fact that these things are getting popped into my head. My grandmother would say, "Wer bist du? Who do you think you are?"
I'm just like the germ on the flea.
Who do you think? Yeah, exactly. Who do you think you are? You're comparing yourself to Rashi. Never had such a thought. So he says, but now he's got something. He's going to do something that Rashi couldn't do. He gets to do the mitzvah of Lo Sasu Ruach Arei Levavachem. He gets to not stray after his heart. And he says over here, and who do you think that verse is talking to? Tzaddikim? This is a mitzvah that tzaddik can't do, I'm sorry. Tzaddikim don't have free choice. Yeah. The thoughts that pop into their heads are thoughts that are only for good things. That's the definition of a tzaddik. A tzaddik has no freedom of choice to think, to do anything wrong.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You look perplexed, so.
No.
Okay? So he doesn't, the thought doesn't pop into him. Ain't a kusuf k'nitaber b'tzaddikim. That pasuk is not talking about tzaddikim to call them strayers. Don't stray after your heart. Tzaddikim don't have the opportunity to stray after their hearts. And he talks about later on the idea of purifying one's thoughts. And he says, because it's in the Baal Shem Tov says that if a person's in the middle of davening, he suddenly has a machshava zara, he should work out the root of where the thought was coming from and drive it out. But the Alter Rebbe qualifies that and says,
yeah, please,
that's only if you're a tzaddik, because there's the idea of his kashrus. His kashrus means that there's a connection between the tzaddik and his disciples. It's more than just, hi, this is my Rebbe and this is my student. Mm. But there is an actual soul connection.
Okay. So
that's why you have, for example, you have the Stolner comes every year over here to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Stolner is a Reb. His grandfather was a known miracle worker. The grandfather of the present day Stolner said that my successor is going to have three fingers on his left hand. And that was before the grandson was born. And the grandson was born with three fingers on his left hand.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm not going to say that the grandson is going to be any too much further. I'm not going to, you know, so you have people that won't go to the Stolner to ask for a bracha. Why? Because that means then, now I have a his kashrus to the Stolner. I have my Rebbe, whoever my Rebbe might be, and if I hand a kvittel and ask the Stolner for a Rebbe, so now my neshama becomes attached to his neshama.
What's wrong with that?
I want my neshama to be attached to my Rebbe. I don't want my neshama. I'm not. We're not spreading the wealth as we go.
I guess
you can basically only really have one Rebbe.
Okay.
Yeah, but you can go.
Rebbe shopping. No. There are people who go like Rebbe hopping. Excuse me. Oh.
Fine, what's wrong with that?
Rebbe hopping, okay?
Yeah. But
so then what happens is the label groaner, who was the Rebbe's secretary, says that for many reasons he couldn't become a real chassid. He says because, first of all, a secretary can't be a chassid, and there's three reasons. A secretary can't become a chassid, a family member can't become a chassid, and Yerushalmi can't become a chassid. And so he was the secretary of the Rebbe. His was a grandson of the granddaughter of. Yeah, he was a his grandmother was the granddaughter of the Mittler Rebbe's daughter. Okay, so he's seven generations from the Alter Rebbe. So he's related to the Schneersons. And his family came from Yerushalayim, because what are they doing in Yerushalayim? Who's got the better tish this week? And all the Yerushalmis would go to the better tish. Okay, meaning to say that they never established a real connection with any one of the Rebbes that were in Yerushalayim. So a person's going to has one Rebbe, and they maintain that he's kashrus to that one Rebbe, and then there's a very strong connection. Whereas what happens is if a person goes Rebbe hopping, so his neshama gets diluted around. We're passing around this guy's neshama around. Sometimes he's yours, sometimes he's mine. This one Rebbe said, that was what Rebbe says. Okay, so it says so it happens, what the Baal Shem Tov says, back to what the Baal Shem Tov said about rooting out the thought, is that a tzaddik, and the Alter Rebbe explains it, a tzaddik doesn't have a machshava zora of his own. It could very well be that a tzaddik is going to be in the middle of davening, and suddenly a thought's going to pop into his head. So the Baal Shem Tov says root it out. Because what happens is the thoughts of the tzaddik's disciples pop into the tzaddik's head.
God.
It's like,
and we think we've got problems.
Yeah, really.
You know?
What does he say to do? get rid of that thought for the guy. You know, just root it out. Because how could it possibly be? This is an analogy. It says a person in prison can't free himself. Okay, it'd be like sort of like tying a rope on your waist and pulling yourself up. You can't do that. That's where we are. We're down, and our thoughts are down with us, and we can't pull ourselves out. So this idea of dwelling on a thought in the middle of davening to try to uproot it from its source, while we're in the middle of davening, he says that you're wasting your time. And not only that, but you're spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about the thought that you shouldn't be thinking. But the tzaddik, it's not his thought that he's thinking, it's somebody else's thought, so he's not thinking it, he's just uprooting it. Okay, so the tzaddik is not called zaynim.
But him uprooting it doesn't help you.
Yeah, it does.
It does?
That's one of the things with his kashas to the Rebbe, is that the Rebbe should be able to elevate their chassidim.
Mm-hmm. I see.
That was one of the main things. That was also, however, one of the things that the Alter Rebbe said when people came to him in 1776 and said, we want to accept you as Rebbe. And he said, I'm not pulling you out. You can't hang on to my gartel.
Okay.
Meaning, you're going to have to do it yourself. He's not going to do any of this.
Then does it or doesn't it? If you got to do it yourself, then is he doing it or isn't he doing it?
That you have to ask the Rebbe. I don't know what the Rebbe does or didn't do. But what's seen from the Mashma, what was implied from the Alter Rebbe, is he said, I'm not doing it for you. You have to do it yourself. So the Alter Rebbe would get somebody else's thought and said, he'd push it out and say, hey, take it back. I don't want it. Do it yourself. Mm-hmm. That was actually a very big thing. Okay, so, like, you know, the joke that, I don't know if it's a joke or what it was, that Jacobson told by the Malava Malka, by Yutes Kislev.
I didn't hear the speech.
You didn't hear the speech?
I wasn't there by the speech.
That was very cute, you know, so he's told it in the name of the Tolshin Rebbe, who lives in Bnei Brak, that he said, what's the difference between a Breslover Chassid and a Lubavitcher? So he said, Nachman of Breslov insisted that his Hasidim have long payas. Why? He's going to come up. He's going to come up to 120 years, and they're going to say, oh, a Breslover. Good. So it says that you have to be Vesimcha, and you have to do his boididus, you have to sequester yourself and cry out to Hashem, okay? And you have to spend diligent time, you have to wake up at 3, Breslovers wake up at like 3, 4 in the morning, they study Shulchan Aruch. You know, this is their Seder Hayam. He said, did you do these things? He says, no. So he says, you didn't even do what your own Rebbe said. Yeah, how could you come to Gan Eden? We're sending you to Gehenna. So they send him to Gehenna. Okay, and he cries out, "Oi, Reb Nachman of Bratslav!" Okay, Reb Nachman comes running. But Reb Nachman's a big tzaddik. He can't go into Gehenna. So what does he do? He leans into Gehenna, and he pulls the guy out by his payas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Comes a Lubavitcher after 120 years, and they ask him, "Oh, Lubavitcher, tell me," the Lubavitcher Rebbe says, "that you have to go on Mitzoyim, you have to be Makar Jews to Torah, you have to daven with Aveda on Shabbos, you have to learn Chassidus at least a half an hour every day. Did you do these things?" This is, "No." So they say to him, "You didn't even listen to what your own Rebbe said. How could you come to Gan Eden? We're sending you to Gehenna." So they send him down to Gehenna, and he says, "Oi, Rebbe, ratavet me, Rebbe, save me." So the Rebbe hears his chassid is calling him. So he runs and he sees his chassid in Gehenna. And he's standing by the door, and he hands him a dollar and says, "Hatzlacha rabba on your shlichus in Gehenna."
Indeed, yes.
Okay. So,
Indeed, yes.
So the Lubavitcher, and this goes back to the Alter Rebbe. The Alter Rebbe said, "I'm not doing it for you. You haven't. I've got my own things to do, and I don't want to schlep you guys up. You have to do it yourself." Okay, so as far as purifying other people's thoughts and things like that, I mean, there's the story with the Tzemach Tzedek that the Alter Rebbe said to him, he wanted to give him a matana of, I think it was Das. He wants to give him a present of knowledge, of feeling a connection to Elokus. And the Tzemach Tzedek said, "No thanks, I'd rather do it myself." Okay, so he didn't. So then the Tzemach Tzedek, when he was older, said he regretted it because he could have taken the present and still done it
and gone for it
on his own.
Yeah.
So this person who's having a machshava zora, here he is, you know, it's divine providence where he finds himself. He's in a business someplace.
Right.
And there's all kinds of taivas flying in front of his eyes.
Mm.
And the eye sees and the heart wants.
Mm.
And what does he do? He says, "I'm not interested." The person doesn't understand what a great nachas he just caused to Hashem.
Hmm.
Because why did Hashem create the world? He says right over here, was to make a dira b'tachtonim. He uses that word later, in 33, 34. And how do we make a dwelling place for Hashem down here? Well, for the average Joe Beinoni, it's through eskafia. Through controlling himself.
Mm-hmm.
And every time a person puts a little effort to control their animal soul, Hashem says, "That's why I made the world." Yes, that's wonderful. Look what this person is doing. Even if it's just a little thing like pushing out a thought. I'm not gonna even look at that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And he says, "Elabit Bani Namakiyatsi Boshinaifli," as he says, very quickly glances over it. Who has Machshava Zoras? Bainanim. And people like Beinanim. He doesn't mention what the vast majority of the world happens to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not Beinanim. Shenayflum lahi huri nuvev machshav the bein behatir bein kulu. That for these people, they suddenly get promiscuous thoughts in their head, whether it be a permitted promiscuous thought or a not permitted promiscuous thought, etc. What happens now? When he stops thinking about them, says, "No, I don't want to think about that." Mikayim lavza. Now he has fulfilled this negative precept. And our sages say, a person who has an opportunity and a real strong desire to do something wrong, and sits back and doesn't do it, is given credit as though he had done a big thing. As though he did something. Why? Because he actually did. He controlled himself. Not only is it that he didn't do something, he did. He controlled himself. And so Hashem says, "I'm giving this guy a big push. We'll give him a charge." And not only that, What does it say about it? It says, Yistalaki karda kutshebricha b'kule alma. The glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not the Shekhinah that we talked about last week, the difference between Shekhinah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the creative aspect of Hashem, is Yistalik b'chol olam, b'kula almim, is elevated throughout the whole entire spectrum of creation. And all a guy has to do is just stop thinking about something. No, I'm not going to think that. God gets a charge. That's why he should be, and not only should he be sad, he should feel happy. Hashem has given him, because how is it that he has this opportunity? Something flashed in front of his eyes. Okay? Who put that thing in front of his eyes?
Abister.
That's all Hashgacha Pratis. It's all divine providence. In other words, he should feel happy that Hashem is trusting him to be able to handle that situation where he'll see something that he's not supposed to see and he'll not think about it, because Hashem knows this guy has the ability. Because of Hashem, Hashem knows that if this guy, for example, would suddenly see something and wouldn't have the ability to control himself, so Hashem wouldn't show it to him. Come in. Is that Irwin?
Hello.
Oh, this is Mrs. Waterstone. Anyway. He says that the guy feels depressed. It's arrogance because he doesn't recognize his place. And only it's an ingraciousness. Here it is, Hashem is giving you the opportunity of performing a mitzvah, and not only are you seizing the opportunity, you're saying, I don't want to do this mitzvah, I'm upset I have to do this mitzvah, I would rather not do this mitzvah, I think I'm smarter than Hashem that I should need to do this mitzvah. So what kind of attitude is this? So a person should get depressed?
You should feel bad if you're doing a bear. I mean, you should want to do...
He's saying that this guy is thinking a thought.
Yeah.
Okay, he didn't do anything yet. The thought popped into his head. Okay? So don't feel bad that the thought popped into your head. Pop the thought out.
Yeah.
That's what he should do, and he should feel happy that he was given the opportunity to stop thinking about it.
Having the thought's not an avera.
Yeah, but I mean, someone chooses to dwell on it.
If you choose to dwell on it, yes, you are doing something wrong.
Then it becomes a neveira.
Yeah, now the person is guilty of having machshava zoras.
Yeah,
which I don't believe anywhere it says that there's an neveira to be thinking things wrong. I could be wrong about that. Other than the fact that it says, you know, v'lo sasad rachalei levavachem, don't turn after your heart. As if the guy's thinking about it, if he never thought about it, he'd never think about doing it. But like this, you know, so he is not supposed to be straying after the bad thoughts that he was thinking. So where's the negative? Is the straying, not the thinking.
Yeah.
So I'm not so sure about the
But doesn't it say later in Tanya that it talks about the idea that who was it? There was a particular. I'm thinking of a story of a fellow who he had thoughts and he dwelled on the thoughts for a long, long time. And his Rebbe said, this part I can't correct. Because it was the whole situation that he committed to Vera, because it was premeditated for a long, long time. This part he couldn't
help. This is a story that was told a couple of years ago at a Yitzhak Kislev.
Perhaps.
And I'm trying to think who was the speaker who said it. Is a guy came to the Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev.
Yes.
And said he needs a tikkun.
Right.
Because he was he had an affair with a married woman.
I don't know. I think that's what
No. Well, she wasn't married. Okay, she wasn't married. He had an affair with a woman, not married.
Right.
Okay, well, she's not supposed to do that kind of stuff. But then he said, so the belief of this started to come of a tikkun. He said, oh, by the way, Rebbe, because he was telling him about being a Baal Anida and this and that. He said, no, you don't understand. She went to mikveh first. And Levi Yitzchak Berdichev said to him, you were able to control yourself for 2 weeks? Mm-hmm. And then did the Avera? He said, I can't help you.
Right.
So what happened is that he went to the Alter Rebbe. And he told the same thing to the Alter Rebbe, that he had having an affair with this girl,
right,
and that she was not a Nida, and the Alter Rebbe gave him a tikkun, whatever the tikkun was.
Okay.
So this is, what's the deal? Is Levi Yitzchak Berdichev was a Chagas Rebbe. Chagas means emotions. If it would have been a crime of passion that he saw this beautiful woman and said okay and propositioned with her and bedded her down right away, so that's something Levi Yitzchak Berdichev could deal with.
Mm.
But the guy stopped himself and said, no, you're a Nida. There's a Chayav Karas, an Isser Karas over here. I'm going to control myself for 2 weeks. I'm going to use my head about and make this an intellectual experience over here, because I'm controlling it with my intellect, and it's no longer a crime of passion anymore. Now it's total premeditation.
Right.
For that, Levi Yitzchak Berdichev said, I can't handle such a thing. The Alter Rebbe was Chabad. His whole thing was intellect. So he could relate to dealing with a crime of intellect, of premeditation, because of the way his whole philosophy was. Is that the story you're thinking about?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
So perhaps I took the wrong thing from the story, because I thought the implication was here is that, well, maybe not then, that his contemplation of the Avera was
made it worse.
Was even worse than the actual deed.
Correct. In that instance, and he says over here, so
that in and of itself, that just the contemplation, this premeditation, in and of itself was an avera.
Yeah, and it says, I don't know about some of you call it an avera per se, but it's worse as far as the effect that it has on the neshama, because since it is that these are called garments of the neshama,
right?
Okay, so let's say it's pouring raining outside. Okay, and you got your big yellow slicker on, your big raincoat on with the rain hat and the galoshes, and your raincoat gets really wet. Okay, no, your raincoat got wet. Let's say you were outside in the pouring rain and you got to the point where your undershirt got wet. Which is worse? Obviously, when your undershirt is wet, it's like much worse of an
event. Far worse.
Far worse. So the machshava is an undergarment to the neshama,
right?
Where the action is an overgarment,
right? But
so in that one instance, thinking that the wrong thing has a greater effect on the neshama because it's closer to the neshama.
So here's where I want to go with this, because we've said previously that the Alter Rebbe clearly says there's no such thing as gray; it's black or white,
right?
And if the discussion is that unless I'm thinking wrong, the only thing that can cause damage to a neshama is an avera.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, you'd have to say the thoughts were avera.
He's not going to be in violation necessarily, unless I'm wrong. I mean, you know, somebody listening online is going to come back and say this is the pusik for it, you know. But it's not necessarily an avera, but the effect that it's going to have is going to be detrimental.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, I hear you. I'm having trouble processing that piece.
Okay. But we're stuck on jargon more than we're stuck on anything else.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. No. Right. Yeah. Go.
Okay.
I'll get clarity later on this.
Okay. Va'al kein yira levava al she'ena medreges tzaddik. Therefore, what is he getting all despondent about? He's getting despondent that he's not a tzaddik. Because tzaddikim don't think such stupid things that this guy's thinking.
well put.
And if it would have been that this guy would recognize his place,
yeah,
tzaddik, that he is really very far from being a tzaddik. How far is he? He says, "Halavai ayabainani velo rasha kol yamav," and woe that it should be that for one moment this guy should be a bainani and stop being a rasha.
Right.
Okay, Fitzy Lipsky used to have a word. He said, "Halavai should be a rush of a tovlo, and not a rush of a ralo his whole life."
Yes.
Harizois humidus abeninim vavidasim. This is what beninim do. Lichvois hayetzer, they conquer the yetzahara. The tzaddik doesn't conquer the yetzahara. It comes pre-conquered.
Yeah, he doesn't have one.
Just add water. Right. That now he's got this thought which is coming up from the heart and he's going to the brain and he's supposed to be thinking about it, because he's not going to think about it. He's going to remove his mind from it completely. Push it out of his mind with two hands. It's very hard to control a person's thought.
It is.
It's very hard because your thoughts are constantly running.
Yeah.
And to just stop thinking something, okay? I'll stop. I'm not going to think that thought.
Well,
what are you doing right now when you're saying, "I'm not going to think that thought"?
You're thinking about that thought.
So the only way to get rid of a thought
is to put
something else there.
Right, exactly.
That's why the Rebbe says, probably every Rebbe who ever lived, going back to Moshe, maybe if not even Avraham, said that you have to know things so that when the thoughts come, you have something else to think about.
Someone else to think about.
You should have what to think about.
Yeah.
Whether it commits things to memory, or commit ideas to memory, think about a class that it was that you had.
Yeah.
And try and think through the details.
Right.
So that this way, when the thought comes, a person has, "I'm putting up a defense.
Right.
I'm not thinking that. I'm thinking this."
Right.
That's the only way that a person can stop thinking something. And he says right here, with every push that a person pushes these thoughts out of his head, he subjugates the forces of evil down here.
Right.
And then when we get excited, it gets Hashem excited in a reciprocal relationship. And then Hashem subjugates the forces of evil at their source.
Yeah.
So what has happened now is when a person, this is a very simple thing, person gets put into a situation.
Wow.
He sees something which is going to trigger a thought that he shouldn't be thinking. Okay, it means Hashem wants him to be right there, right now, to do this.
Right.
And he pushes the thought out of his mind, he thinks about something else. Okay? So what does that do? That causes Hashem to root out the source of evil from the world.
Mm-hmm.
So every thought that a person stops thinking, it's just a thought. How much effort does it take to stop thinking a thought? What is Hashem doing? Hashem is obliterating the forces of evil. We have to be the initiator. But you can think, wait a minute, it's only just a thought. How great are the forces of evil in this world? Pretty big. This world is called Rubikakula. Almost entirely evil. And what am I doing? I'm pushing out one stupid thought.
Right.
Okay? It says, Hashem's not into quantities. You can't impress infinity with a quantity.
Indeed, yes.
No matter how much you're going to do, it's not going to impress Hashem as far as quantity goes.
Right.
Hashem wants the quality, wants the effort put forth. As we see, for example, you have the Aron HaKodesh, which contained the Luchos.
Mm.
The Luchos probably weighed several tons.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people carried them? Sapphire is very heavy.
It's very dense, 18 by 18 cube.
Yeah, it's pretty. I'm not sure what the specific density of sapphire is, but you're talking heavy duty.
This was
2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5. So it's more than 18 by 18.
It is. It's two times that. Each piece was 18 by 18.
Yes.
So you're
talking. This is some heavy weight over here.
Yeah.
And how did they carry this stuff? How would they carry this box that contained it? with a finger by four people. Four people would put their finger on the Aron HaKodesh and lift up, and they would levitate. Okay, like you used to do when you were like 14 years old. You'd close your eyes and put your heads on the table, and the table would rise, right? Somebody would be pushing the table up anyway. But so that's not going to help if the thing weighs a couple thousand pounds. Okay, everybody, close your eyes and push up on this 1,000-pound weight over here.
Right.
All they had to do was put their finger on it. They're not extending any effort. These guys weren't, you know, coming home at the end of the day.
Gee,
man, I am beat from carrying that ark today. What a hard day we had. No. It carried itself.
Carried them.
Really? Yeah. So if it was carrying itself, what do you need the four guys for? It's carrying itself. And the answer is, that's not the way Hashem works.
Right.
Hashem works in a world with properties and laws of physics.
Right.
And the laws of physics say things don't just float by themselves.
Right.
Unless you can somehow get it to
They need a finger.
You get it to superconduct.
Right.
But you need to have some kind of effort put down into it. It could be just a minimal amount so that people could say, look, those guys are carrying the Aron HaKodesh.
Right.
So when we do something so simple as to not think a thought that we shouldn't be thinking, Hashem is obliterating the forces of evil.
Mm.
And it's our responsibility. Hamagvia Asma Kinesher, that the forces of evil are picking themselves up like an eagle. Okay, he uses the expression eagle because it's taken from the verse that comes right now. Im Tagvia Kinesher, Mishamar Idichanum Hashem. If you'll pick yourself up like an eagle, from there I will make you descend, spaketh the Lord.
Mm.
Okay, what's the deal with an eagle? An eagle is the highest flying bird.
Right.
Okay, but it's an interesting thing about an eagle. And it's a non-kosher bird.
Right.
It's the first bird listed of the birds that we're not allowed to eat, is the Nesher. Because we generally have this idea that the Hebrew name given to something describes what it does.
Its character, yeah.
There's something that we can tell about the thing from its name.
Mm.
Okay, like Emes, for example, truth. Emes is an Aleph, a Mem, and a Tuf, which is the first, middle, and last letter of the Aleph base. So something to be true has to be true from beginning through the middle to the end. It has to be consistent. What's a nesher? What does the word linasher mean? It means to molt. M-O-L-T.
Molt.
Yes. What is molt? The bird loses its feathers. Now, I got news for you. Sparrows molt.
Right.
So what's the big deal? This is the most majestic bird. You ever seen an eagle? It's like such a big deal that when people say, I saw an eagle, they say, I saw an eagle. Okay? No one ever walked in, you know, you just come into work and a guy says, you know what? I saw a sparrow today.
Wow.
We haven't hit nuclear holocaust yet, you know, so. Thank God. But when a person says, I saw an eagle, I was driving on the road, and I saw this thing just like soaring, and I was like, whoa, it was an eagle.
Right.
Okay? And the best thing that we can call this thing is that it molts.
Yeah.
It loses its feathers.
Oh, goody.
So, what's the deal? Why does a bird lose its feathers? To get new and better feathers.
Right.
So, here you have an animal which is such a majestic bird, so high flying, such a hot shot.
Right.
And it realizes that it's got to improve too.
It's got to be renewed, right.
It has to improve.
Yeah.
Okay? So it says that the forces of evil are going to pick themselves up like an eagle. Hashem says, I'm going to knock it right down.
Mm.
But we have to be the instigators.
Mm. I will bring it down.
Uh-huh. No, Hashem, where am I? Hold it. No, we're talking about Hashem. Explained. As it says, we quoted this before, that we don't understand how great is the nachas before Hashem when the forces of evil are subjugated down here, that the glory of a Kadosh Baruch Hu rises above over everything. More than any other thought, v'istalkus da yasir makulu, and there's a greater thing over here going on than any other time. V'lachin al yipol lev adam alav, v'lo yir alavav ma'ay. Therefore, a person shouldn't get despondent; he shouldn't be dejected. Gam imi yakein kol yom milchama zu. Even if he's doing this his whole entire lifetime.
Right.
Because who's we didn't come with a contract that said, oh, by the way, when you hit 90, you already get to be immediately a tzaddik.
Right.
Doesn't there's no contracts over here as to have to a level of achievement. Ki ula lekach nivra. So don't get despondent, because maybe that's why you were born.
Yeah.
Why did Hashem create this individual person so that his whole life he should be engaged in this war of having to control himself? And this is his service to constantly subjugate the forces of evil. So, and the fact that this guy's never going to be a tzaddik anytime in his life anytime soon?
No.
You know?
You're not going to be a Kohen either.
That's true.
So, wait, you're going to gripe
That's
about
true.
That?
I'm going to gripe
that
I'm not a Kohen.
Yeah.
So, I remember when the Rebbe told, 1976, when the Rebbe told everybody from age of bar mitzvah to start wearing Rebbeinu Toms.
Mm.
And he did it because what would happen is when a guy would reach 17, 18, I was starting to get, 16 years old, they would write in on their birthday and say, does the Rebbe think it's appropriate for me to start wearing Rebbeinu Toms?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Rebbe basically was saying, I'm really tired of answering that question.
Uh-huh.
So you know what? So everybody, just start putting on Rebbeinu Toms when you bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So, I'm thinking to myself, I'm putting on Rebbeinu, I was 17 at the time, because that's when I older was when I became from.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, if I put on Rebbeinu Toms starting at 17, maybe by the time I'm 40, I should be putting on the Ravid and Shemusha Rabbah.
Uh-huh.
The four pair of tefillin, like the big guys wear.
Sure.
Like that's what I was thinking.
Like the big guys do, yeah.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. Then when I was, it didn't take me very long to think that I suddenly got to 40 and said, no, I'm not one of the big guys.
Yeah.
It didn't take me very long after that. It's, yeah. To realize, no, I'm not going to start putting on four pair of tefillin when I'm 40 years old.
Yeah, okay. I may be wearing those tefillin right now, but I haven't yet achieved wearing those tefillin yet.
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, when I'm 90 years old, I'll be putting on four pair of tefillin. No, probably also not.
Yeah.
Val ze amar iyo v'rasadar shayim. And about this, Job said, Master of the world, you created wicked people, which is one of the questions in chapter 1. How could you say you create wicked people? We have free choice. I can choose if I'm going to be a wicked person or not. So what do you mean I was created wicked? Not that he created them that they have no choice, that they must be wicked. There is no person alive who can say, Hashem created me wicked, I have no choice, I must do only the wrong thing all the time.
Yeah.
There is no such person alive. But what? When it says, when Job said he created wicked people, is it that they have the opportunity to do wrong things.
Mm.
Even if it just is just in their thoughts. And they're going to be in constantly warfaring to remove their mind from them in order to subjugate the forces of evil. But he'll never be able to vanquish the forces of evil at all. Because that is done through the tzaddikim.
Right.
That's the aveda of a tzaddik. The tzaddik's aveda is hapcha, converting evil, rooting out it from it. Because when you have to understand, everything is created by Hashem. And if everything is created by Hashem, that must mean it has some kind of spark of holiness within it.
Has value, right.
So therefore, it's up to the tzaddik to be able to suck out that spark of a holiness from that thing, which is from the forces of evil, and elevate it to holiness.
Right.
The famous story with, for example, Napoleon's march and La Marseillaise.
Right.
Okay, you know what I'm talking about, Israel?
Yeah.
Okay. So, what was happening is they took the chayas out of the niggin, which is rooted in klippa,
mm.
and elevated it to make those two songs in the Gunim. So now that they become Kedusha. And only a tzaddik has the ability of that. Taking something which is Shalish Klippas, a Tameis, and elevating it to Kedusha.
Yeah.
Not to say you're going to construe this person could say, you know, I'm a tzaddik and I can eat pig. And that would elevate it to holiness.
Right, sure, yeah.
Shabbos High Tzvi tried that one.
Uh-huh. How'd that work out?
Yeah, how'd that work out? Exactly. Okay, I don't see Mashiach here so fast because of what he did.
Yeah.
So the but the tzaddik is not going to eat it, but he's going to. He doesn't have to eat it. He's going to root it out from its spiritual source and elevate the spark of holiness to spark of holiness to kedusha.
Right.
To be continued. We're down on page 118, 117. And the last paragraph over there, Shnei Minei Nachas Ruach Lefanav. Okay.